pretty amazing to feel the quality of the silence. That's actually here. And when we stop doing, talking, speaking, then we just feel it. Such a deep quality of silence in this place and on this journey that we very much nourished together also in our practice. I like this this habit that we've gotten into where one of us gives the talk and you all get to look at a spectacular view, and really inviting you to enjoy the view as part of this, and also to stay comfortable. So if the sun gets too intense or the shade gets too cool or whatever, then feel free to move. Don't feel like you're disturbing something by doing that. Yeah. It seems pretty unreal that this is our last evening together. And just wanted to kind of share some reflections that I've had today about kind of what has been, what is, and what will continue. So this morning, when we were at that stage of pretty much packed up and gathering ourselves, I was just looking around that pristinely beautiful campsite. Well, we made it a campsite place that we were at. And I was really touched by how, you know, the tents had been there, the kitchen had been there, everything had been there, and then everything was packed up. And it was like there was no sign of us being there anymore. It was back to its natural state. So I was really letting myself absorb that, also knowing that, of course, if I look closer, I would find our imprint on the place, you know, the places where our tents were, the vegetation would be squished, you know, there'd be various locations where we'd peed. You know, there was the toilet, which even though it was covered up, is still there and wasn't there before. So of course there is an impact. But very, very subtle, you know, practically invisible. And today through the day, and I actually love these transition days, even though I don't love transitioning back to civilization. I love to see how things change and to see how we were exposed to more and more impact of humans through the day, still very light. But that first meeting with metal, you know, with that bridge, and I could really feel in my body as I was walking there that was kind of not, I wasn't used to it anymore. So a lot of sensitivity that's evolved over, you know, less than a week that we've been so immersed in nature and in beauty. So seeing the kind of impact that we make on nature, on wilderness. And also seeing, as Nathan was pointing out this morning, the impact that wilderness makes on us. So in many ways, you know, we've been walking through nature, we've been walking through wilderness, But I think even more than that, nature has been walking through us. You know, wilderness has been passing through us. We've been receiving it from everywhere, you know, through every pore in our skin, through our feet. It's really in us, moved through us now. Part of us now. And some of this impact, some of that presence of nature in us, again, as Nathan was saying this morning, is very subtle, very delicate, maybe still hard to see or recognize. Even though I feel just looking at your faces now that you really know what I'm talking about. When I was speaking about it now, I could feel the resonance. So we also all feel. We feel the impact, we feel that sense of nature flowing through us, being part of us. And so some of it is subtle and delicate, other aspects of it may be more recognizable, more pronounced, more clear. But all of it, it's okay, happens. I'll take a break to attend to the pots. So all, whatever the impact has on us, there's a lot of tenderness there. Yeah, it's like young shoots, like the very young growth that we've been seeing here with those tiny little flowers or buds. It's still very tender, very young, very delicate. And it needs care and nurturing and love and attention. So in this process, you know, feeling the impact and that wish to care for that tenderness within us, these young shoots, these seeds that are in us, this time of transition is really key, is really important. You know, as we continue to move physically, yeah, physically, our bodies are continuing to move from the wilderness to the civilization. Yeah, we're continuing that process. And it can be really valuable as part of this process to really take time today and tomorrow to reflect, to feel ourselves as we are right now, with this very clear connection, this very clear sense of tenderness and impact, of being in nature and part of nature. To really feel that, so that we can absorb it more deeply into ourselves. You know, just like a seed when it's planted gets more absorbed into the soil. Really absorb it in. And to feel what it is that we value. And this can come in words, and it can also just come in a sense. Both are equally valuable. But just to take time, like, what was it, what is it that I value about this experience, about being here, and about how I am in this environment? Yeah, so how, what I value about the environment, and about what I value about how I am in this environment. Really key, really, worthwhile reflections to make. And with that, what is it that I want to keep nourishing, that I want to keep supporting? Or even, you know, we can put it even more crudely, you know, what is it that I want to take with me What is it that I want to take with me? It's a bit like before we came here, before we came on the yatra, you know, we packed a bag, right? There was a list. Maybe we looked at it, maybe we didn't. Maybe we followed it, maybe we didn't. But we made some kind of process of packing a bag of things that we thought would be useful, that we thought we would need. And so in a way, we can look at this process now as repacking or packing our bag, our inner bag, for the yatra that is the rest of our lives. Because our bodies are moving on, you know, but the inner yatra doesn't end tomorrow. You know, the yatra can carry on for the rest of our lives. At least aspects of it. If we really, again, do our best to nurture and nourish that process. Quite a few years ago, I think it was in 2002, Nathan and I were part of a group that organized a yatra in Israel. And it had a slightly different flavor. It was a time when there were a lot of suicide bombings and public transportation in particular in Israel. A lot of kind of one of those times that happen too often in our world where there was an upsurge of violence. And there was a lot of despair and a lot of fear around. So that yatra was about being in nature and walking silently like we're doing. But it was also about bringing together Israelis and Israeli Jews and Israeli Palestinians to walk together with a message of peace and of hope and of possibility to live differently. And we did this over a week, just like we've done now. We walked from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, but through the countryside. And it was a deeply, deeply transformative and healing experience, going from a sense of a lot of fear and mistrust and despair to a sense of togetherness and hope and peace in a very real, very tangible way. It's a deeply transformative experience. And at the end of that week, we found ourselves staying with my mother. We were living in the south of Israel at the time, which was very quiet. It's all desert. Nothing happens there. But we were staying with my mother, who lived in Jerusalem at the time. And we just had a few days, and I had to go to the bank. And my bank was right in the center, the city center of Jerusalem, which at that time was like a ghost town, because everyone was afraid to use public transport, to go on buses, and everyone was afraid to go into the city center. But I can't even remember why. I really had to go to the bank. And we spent a few hours kind of considering our options. It was like, take the bus. Nope. Take a taxi. Too expensive. Borrow a car. Not available. So we decided to walk. And so in that way, we carried on the yatra that we'd just been on. You know, that yatra was still with us, and it opened up that option of possibility that we could just allow ourselves to take the time and walk into town, and to do that in the same spirit that we had been walking before. A spirit of peacefulness and openness and presence. And yeah, there was fear. But there was something stronger than the fear in that sense of presence and openness and hope that we had been experiencing and nourishing for a week before that. So instead of shutting down as we would have before, opening up or stepping into the reality that was there. And I'm telling this story as a real example, you know, of what's possible for us. You know, we may be thinking, oh, you know, my daily life conditions are completely different to this. What could flow from being here in this incredibly powerful nature? What could flow from this into living in a city and having a stressful job or whatever my reality is? And I'm giving this example as an example that says, yes, it's possible. You know, not as a kind of fixed, you know, it's not like a photograph that we take this, freeze this moment now, and then transport it to next week. But the aliveness, the life force, that can keep flowing into changing conditions, into challenges. It can kind of keep flowing with us. So what can we pack into our bag for the yatra that's the rest of our lives? And that's really, I can't find the words to encourage you enough to reflect on that for yourselves, you know, today and tomorrow. What do I want to put in there? I'm also going to offer some suggestions because that's kind of my role. But just feel free to see if they meet you or not. That's what's going to go into my bag. It doesn't have to go into yours. We're all different. And to find what it is that you value, that you feel like you want to keep nurturing, to keep flowing. Reminded me when I was kind of, when this metaphor of the backpack came up, packing the backpack came up earlier today. It reminded me of the first time I went to India when I was in my early 20s. And my big brother, who was at that point in our lives was a very classic older brother, was helping me pack my bag. And he was very clear about what I needed and what I didn't need. So I still remember some of the stuff that was in there. I went to India as a 20-something, 23-year-old woman traveling on her own. And I had two T-shirts. It's like one you wear and the other you wash. That was like, I can still hear his voice. A pair of shorts. You know, no woman wears shorts in India. One pair of trousers. And things like cable ties, which I didn't even know how to use, if you all know what those are. But that was kind of the style. So that's kind of what happens when someone else packs your bag for you. Or, you know, you trust their authority so much that you don't even say, hold on, you know, what do I do with these thin plastic things? When would I use them and for what? So really, like, what I'm going to suggest, see that as suggestions and kind of things as, you know, things that are there to trigger the process for you. It's not things that you need to necessarily take on. So the first thing on my list is gratitude. I think that's something that's come up so much over the days here from people. The first thing is gratitude. And being in nature, being together the way we are, it's something that's arisen very naturally for us. But gratitude can also be a practice. It can be something that we intentionally turn to and cultivate and explore in our lives. And it can be accessible to us even when times are hard, you know, even when there's times of difficulty. And there's been a lot of research about gratitude recently. It's quite, for me, it's quite fascinating. They've shown that by doing just a very, very kind of minimal gratitude practice, like writing down in a journal every day three things that you're grateful for that day, that really can change people's well-being and happiness. And the amazing thing about it is that we're not changing reality, you know, so we're not creating things. We're just inclining our mind and opening to the things that are going well for us, or things that we are appreciating in our lives. And so that's something really kind of worth playing with. You know, what am I grateful for? What can I be grateful for on a daily basis or in my life? The second thing was that possibility to expand awareness that we've been kind of dabbling into. So when we feel ourselves shrinking or contracting around things, the possibility to open up. Sometimes it can be just by looking up, just by raising the gaze and taking in more of what's there. Sometimes it can be internally, to just feel the space in the body, to feel the whole body experience. The third thing is silence and space. Silence and space. And just like we were experiencing at the beginning of the talk here, the depth of the silence here has been so key to our process together. And so finding opportunities, finding time in our lives to really connect to the silence within us and the silence around us if possible, but really feeling that. And sometimes it can be surprising where we find silence, the silence that holds everything in it. This is a bit of a cheat because it's three things in one. Kindness, forgiveness, and perspective. So the importance of kindness in our attitude to ourselves and to others. Really bringing that in again and again. And that being a kind of field in which everything else happens. So when we feel we've messed up, when we feel unhappy with ourselves for whatever reason, that field of kindness can allow forgiveness to come in, can give perspective, remembering that this is just one aspect of myself or one aspect of my life. And by forgiving, by letting go, by acknowledging and not holding on, change can happen, transformation can happen. So really bringing that in. Remembering that whatever is happening, that's not the whole picture of who I am. That's the perspective. It's just one thing that's going on right now. But it's not everything. It's my personal favorite at the moment. patience. An ongoing theme for me for a few months. And the yatra is a real place where we experience that one step at a time. You know, we just take one step at a time. We don't know where we're going. We don't know when we'll get there. We don't know if Anna's lost or not. We just know to take one more step. So one step at a time, and really trusting that that's enough. We don't need to figure out the whole journey. And then that anything can happen at any time, which I gave a whole talk about, so I won't say a lot more about it. But yeah, anything can happen at any time. Remembering that. Remembering that. Nature. The nature that's around us right now, which is also the nature that we are. So sometimes we really miss being in nature. And I know that for myself, I've heard it from many of you. You know, we really miss being in nature. So finding ways to be in nature externally, but also finding ways to be in this. You know, this too, this is nature. It's not anything else but. So sometimes when we really feel constricted, contracted, you know, touching your face, touching your arm, looking at the mirror, looking at this incredible human body that is creating miracles faster than we can see or feel. This too is nature, connecting to that. The next one is humor, which I haven't managed to make you laugh much in my talks, but I've heard you laughing with each other. So humor, really important not to take life too seriously whenever possible. And the final one, the final thing that's going in my backpack is to remember that we're not alone. So a great aspect of this yatra together is community, is that sense of togetherness, which comes a lot through this transparency we live in. Anna and I were just joking today laughing happily at the fact that the distance the women go off to pee gets shorter every day, because we just all get used to being around each other in the most intimate ways. And so this is significant, that sense of not being alone, that sense of togetherness that often comes very powerfully in these extreme situations where we kind of have practically nowhere to hide, you know, not even the toilet. And this is so important, because one of the most contracting things that we face, the most difficult things that we face, is that sense of aloneness, that sense of loneliness. So in those moments, remembering this, remembering that you're not alone, that at any given moment, there are so many others in the world who are in tune with what matters to you too. I was reflecting on this sequence of yatras through the ages today also. You know, we have this this is a unique thing, you know, all of us coming together and this happening with all the conditions that we had is unique. And at the same time, it's part of a flow that stretches from the time of the Buddha, when he was encouraging the monks and nuns to go and be homeless, through the monastic traditions of Southeast Asia, where they go on these kind of yatras regularly. One of our teachers likes to tell how when he was a monk in Thailand, his teacher would just suddenly say, "We're going on a yatra." And the whole monastery would have to just, in the blink of an eye, get ready and go. I'm pretty sure they didn't wear any shoes, right? And weren't allowed to wear hats either. And they were bald in Thailand because they were monks. And they would walk for as long as the teacher wanted to walk. And when they'd stop and reach a village, he would give a Dharma talk. Often that would last till 3 o'clock in the morning, apparently. I'm just kind of telling you, just so you know. So this tradition, you know, of yatras, the Buddha's time, and then for generations, monastic traditions carrying on, and then coming to the West, you know, France, Australia, Himalayas, Finland. All connected. So us sitting here now, part of this long, long, long kind of chain or flow that's continued over generations. And our time here, our presence here, is a continuity of that momentum. You know, others will go on yatras. Who knows, maybe one of you will be inspired to organize. I think someone already is inspired to organize a winter yatra in Lapland. I've heard a rumor. But who knows how that will keep on going. But just by this unique event, unique but not separate, it's a flow. So we're actually never alone. It reminds me of something I read recently by one, I think it was Sharon Salzberg, but I'm not sure. But one of the senior teachers in the West, in our tradition, who was sharing about a student who came to her and told her how powerful metta practice, the practice that we were just kind of trying out a little bit today, how powerful metta practice has been in her life. And so Sharon asked her, "Oh, you know, how does that look in your practice?" And she said, "No, it's not in my practice that it's powerful. It's that whenever I'm in a really dark place, whenever I feel very lonely and alone and things are really difficult, I remember that somewhere in the world there's somebody right now practicing metta for me." And that is just wow. And it's true. Wherever we are, no matter what our situation is, there's somebody in the world right at that moment that's sending metta our way. So we're never alone. Even now, the birds just like to end with one kind of personal maybe sharing about the meaning of this yatra for me. So maybe some of you know that Anna was first inspired to create the Finnish yatra when she came on the Himalayan yatra, which was, I guess, around 4 years ago. I can't remember now. And that Himalayan yatra was organized by our good friend, beloved friend Ben. Who died in September very suddenly and unexpectedly. And this is the first yatra we've done since he's died. I was just realizing that today. And he's been incredibly present over the days here. I mean, every time I look at Nathan, he's wearing Ben's clothes. He's here because without him, we wouldn't be here. If he hadn't had the vision to organize a yatra in the Himalayas, we would probably never have met Anna. Anna wouldn't have been inspired for this to happen. And today, when we were walking in those big, big open spaces, I remembered a ritual that Ben's wife, who's also a dear friend of ours, and his little daughter, Leela, who's going to be 4 next month, they do when they're in nature, in places where they feel his presence. And we've done that with them several times. They shout out into the wind, "We love you, Ben Winston." And so today, as we were walking in the big, wide, open spaces, and I could feel him so strongly with us, I was calling out in my heart, "I love you, Ben Winston." So that power of love and connection and non-aloneness that can continue beyond life and death, that's in many ways what this yatra is about. That's in many ways what our practice is about. So let's have a few moments of silence together to close. So may this yatra continue to nourish us and flow through our lives. And may our lives continue to be a yatra of love, of kindness, of gratitude, and of community.